This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on February 16th, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next advisory opinion on the agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2012-4, Justice Party of Mississippi. We have Mr. Zeitz joining us this morning. If you'd like to join us, I believe we have questions for you, sir. We'll start off with a presentation by Ms. Wallstriker from the Office of General Counsel.
Thank you, Chair Hunter. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document 12-10 is a draft response to an advisory opinion request submitted by James C. Farrer, Jr. on behalf of the Justice Party of Mississippi. The request asks the Commission whether the Justice Party of Mississippi qualifies as a state committee of a political party. The draft concludes that the committee will qualify as a state committee of a political party when a Justice Party of Mississippi nominee for federal office, whose name appears on the election ballot, qualifies as a candidate under the Act and Commission regulations. We received one comment on the draft from the requester, and Paul Zeitz, representative of the Justice Party, is here today.
Thank you. And the deadline, the 60-day deadline for this advisory opinion is, could you remind me?
I'm not sure of the exact date, but it's the first week in March, I believe.
March 16th, we believe.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So we do have a little, I just wanted to note for the record that we do have a little bit of time in considering this request, and if you need to get back to us and answer any of our questions, feel free to do so, and it's possible that we may not vote on this today, but we'll see how the conversation goes. Anybody have any questions for Mr. Zeitz? Commissioner Bowerly?
Thank you. Thank you for your comment. I wanted to just make sure I understood your party's process. In the midst of a busy primary campaign season, we see all forms of nominating processes from caucuses to elections. So as I understand it, you'll be having a convention later in the year, and that's where you will nominate your candidates. Is that correct? Could you just explain so we have that as part of our record?
Yes, thank you. Thanks to the Commission for considering this advisory opinion. And as you know, the Justice Party is a new party that was recently formed in December, and Mississippi is the first state that's coming to the Commission for an advisory opinion request. We expect more will be coming. And of course, the National Committee will also be coming sometime down the road. So as in terms of the Mississippi process, our understanding of the state law in Mississippi is that the Justice Party of Mississippi has achieved ballot access according to the laws of the state of Mississippi, and that that is the requirement of the FEC to have ballot access. And so that's why we're seeking a favorable vote for on the advisory opinion as soon as possible. In terms of the process, there is a structure, bylaws that have been reviewed by the Commission, and there is an intention to have a convention that would include representatives of the four congressional districts in Mississippi, which make up the state party, sometime in June of 2012.
Okay.
We know that there will be at least one candidate, Rocky Anderson from former mayor of Salt Lake City. There could be other candidates, although that's unlikely. But the Justice Party of Mississippi feels like it was important to have an authentic, you know, convention process rather than a more rapid, you know, to let the party build over the next few months so that there's a participatory process for selection of a presidential candidate. And other federal candidates also may be sought.
Thank you, and I appreciate you coming in, and that fact is important, and I think the Commission has in the past discussed ballot access in dealing with some of these types of AOs. I do, from my perspective, I don't think they're inconsistent with the statute. It was a slightly different factual situation where they'd already achieved ballot access. They already had someone on the on the ballot, and that's important because, of course, our definition that comes from the statute says that a political party is an association, committee, or organization that nominates a candidate who's a candidate for election to any federal office whose name appears on the election ballot as the candidate for that committee or association or party. And that's where I think the commission has to follow in terms of whether your entity is a party, a state party of a national party qualifies under our definition at this point or not. And the draft, which I support, concludes that you're not yet, because while you do have under Mississippi law, and we don't interpret Mississippi law, we interpret the federal law, says that you might be a party for their purposes, you've achieved that ballot access, mm-hmm. we're required to look at whether you have someone whose name appears on that ballot. And it sounds like you have plans to have all of that happen, and you will nominate this person in June.
Right.
But until that happens, that's what the statute seems to require from my perspective. So that's not really a question for you. I'm just explaining. I appreciate your factual information about the convention, and I just wanted to thank you for your comment and respond. That's how, as I read your comment and I read what we have to look at in determining this AO, I think, it's you're nearly there, but unlike some other AOs we've had in the past, not all of those facts are met. And in some instances, the commission is sometimes reluctant to issue an advisory opinion where all of those conditions aren't met. We don't do, hypothetical situations, for example, but I'm comfortable with the way the draft treats this and telling you that at what point in time you would become a political party. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Commissioner McGann.
The good news, I guess, is it seems that the commission agrees you're a state party once you have your convention, right? But the issue is, I'm curious about your comment, because the issue you raise is that you want to be a party now, because, well, it's could you flesh out a little bit why not being a party now is detrimental to you?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, sir, for your question. As I said, the Justice Party National Committee just was launched in December, and now there, according to the Justice Party USA website, there are folks organizing state committees in 22 states already, and probably more down the road. It's relatively fast uptake of this concept of the new party, and Mississippi was the first state to move forward to get state approval to be on the ballot and have ballot access. And the position of the Justice Party of Mississippi is that the referral to the Texas case in the draft advisory opinion, please let me just say I'm not a lawyer, I'm a doctor. So if I misspeak, it's based on not being an expert. My understanding of that is that in Texas, the rules are very different in order to get ballot access. It requires petitions, and that case was ruled on before that group had achieved ballot access, according to Texas state law. So in the case of Mississippi, the laws are different, and Mississippi allows for the formation of the committee, as has been done by Mr. Farrer and his fellow Mississippians. And so the party has achieved state ballot access, and that even a letter was provided to you to the commission yesterday from the state of Mississippi affirming that. Our position from the Justice Party of Mississippi is that by having a favorable advisory opinion from the FEC, that will enable the Justice Party of Mississippi to raise funds and be able to exert its rights of free speech and to exert itself in the political process of the 2012 election, which is the intention of the party. And any delay in that would hinder our ability to do that. And also, I mean, this could have broader implications. I mean, that's, I can only really speak at it from the Mississippi perspective. It could have broader implications for the whole National Party, because my understanding is that for the National Party to come forward for a favorable advisory opinion, it requires state favorable advisory opinions to make its case. So we think that we've met the, you know, that the Justice Party of Mississippi has achieved ballot access for at least one federal committee candidate because we have ballot access. We haven't named the candidate yet, but we have achieved ballot access for at least one federal candidate, and that's at the presidential level. There's still a debate about congressional candidates that the party would like to put forward, but there's a deadline in Mississippi that I think we missed. So there may be an effort to contest that so that we can put forward congressional candidates in the 2012 cycle. But we feel like we've met the requirement, which is that we've achieved ballot access for at least one federal candidate, which is the office of President of the United States. We haven't named that person yet, and that's according to the laws of Mississippi, that's our right to do it according to the process that's outlined in our Justice Party committee bylaws. So that's the distinction, that we believe we have achieved ballot access for the candidate, yet we haven't named the candidate yet.
So you're kind of stated differently. You feel like you're caught in a circle, right? You to get a good candidate and to look legitimate, you want to be a state party as recognized by the FEC, but to get recognized as a state party by the FEC, you need a candidate. So it's a chicken and the egg, and you want to be known as a state party now for whatever.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, I think we are known as a state party. We are, approved by the state of Mississippi, so it is a legitimate entity. There is a legitimate national process underway, groups organizing around the country. Yes, certainly having the favorable opinion from the FEC is very important.
What can't you do today because you're not recognized as a state party by the FEC that you could do tomorrow if we said you're a state party?
Well, my understanding is that we're limited by the amount of money that we can raise right now, and that if we're able to get a favorable advisory opinion from the FEC by the March 16th deadline, then we could raise more money. And that's where we think our rights as to have free speech under the Justice Party's point of view, you know, is at stake here.
I hear you. I'm sympathetic to that argument. It seems to me that by not being a party, you're being hampered
right
financially, which is part of the First Amendment basket of freedoms that you have. The problem I'm running into is the statute itself, which is what we are stuck with here, for better or for worse. And Commissioner Bowerly has already read it, and I'll read it again just so you know, get it a second time. The term political party means an association, committee, or organization which nominates a candidate for election to any federal office whose name appears on the election ballot as the candidate of such association, committee, or organization. That can be read as the current draft reads it, which is you actually have to nominate a candidate and have the name appear on the ballot. Now, I hear you in your comments, and you point to the guide. The Commission puts out these guides to help people comply. And the way the guide phrases that requirement is the committee must achieve ballot access for at least one federal candidate in the state. You're saying you've achieved ballot access, therefore, at least under the guide's version of a reading of the statute, you've complied, therefore you should be a state party. The other hand, I can read the guide as being consistent with the statute, that when it says you must achieve ballot access for at least one federal candidate in the state, if you emphasize the second part of the phrase, one federal candidate, you can say, well, that means they're actually on the ballot and appearing on the ballot, so you have a candidate. So the guide could be a little bit clearer. And I'm tempted to say, look, if the guide relaxes the statute, I don't see how we could certainly in an enforcement case, jam somebody. I mean, I think the guide, even though it's not really a form, it's not a rulemaking, it's not a separate rule, it is, I think, something that would have to go into a consideration of whether somebody violated the law. At the AO stage, it's a little bit trickier. And I agree with you that the Texas Law Party, the Texas AO, 9549, it helps you on the one hand, because at least that's a marker, but it from your argument, I agree, you can distinguish it, because you're not talking about getting signatures and ballot acts. You've done all that. I'm hung up just on the plain language of the statute. And the other thing I'm hung up on is, if we massage the statute or read it in a way that lets you be a state party, what else that does to existing law, other state parties, other parties who want to become parties, and that kind of thing. And I fear that I just don't know enough to know what could happen. I'm not saying yes to you, because I think if you put this in First Amendment terms, you're definitely having an issue, because you can't raise as much money as you otherwise could raise. So you are in this circle where you're trying to elect someone to federal office, but you essentially have one hand tied behind your back until you actually have that person on the ballot. Ballot access, even if you were still caught in the ballot access thicket, that can be very cumbersome, very expensive in and of itself. So I could see a real nice argument on the constitutional grounds. Unfortunately, the FEC really isn't the place to go for that kind of thing, because we have a statute. Now, if a court has already limited the reach of a statute, already put out a jurisdictional boundary, I'm more than willing to read court cases broadly to limit the ability of the FEC to get in the way of people who want to participate in politics. On the other hand, this statute, I don't know of any case law that's limited the reach of this. Maybe I'll ask the counsel if they're aware of any, just to maybe get them involved in the discussion. Does the general counsel know of any case law that's limited this? Because I know of none.
I'm not aware of any such cases, Commissioner, no. And I agree with you in terms of the plain language of the statute.
How do we, though, the fact that the guide sort of says something else, maybe, what's the significance? Do we have a view on does that give us an ability to tell this requester yes? I'm not sure it does, but
I think there's a statement. I haven't looked at the guide in a while, but I believe there's a disclaimer on the front of the guide that says that no one should rely on the guide. And I think
which is kind of telling in and of itself.
I think,
guide to help, but don't rely on it.
I think the commission is bound by the statute, not the guide.
So it really comes down to how the commission reads the statute, and if we think we can have a plausible other reading of the statute, maybe we can get to yes, but it still is tied to the statute, not the guide.
Yes, Commissioner, I agree with that.
That's all I have for now.
Thank you for submitting the letter yesterday from the Secretary of State of Mississippi. The last sentence in the letter says, "The letter shall serve to confirm that the Justice Party of Mississippi is now on file as a political party registered with the Mississippi Secretary of State's office in accordance with the applicable provisions of the Mississippi Code on 1972. And I haven't had a chance to look into this, but and I don't know if counsel, we just got this yesterday, but I'm assuming that the letter means that you have virtually automatic access. It's just a matter of picking the person and then submitting it to the state. There's nothing. Are there any other hurdles that you're aware of?
So I think this is thank you for that question, because I think it links to the prior question. My understanding is that according to Mississippi state law, we have achieved ballot access for a federal office, for the office of the presidency, because there are deadlines within the Mississippi statute for the different offices. But for congressional offices like Senate and House of Representatives, we have not met that requirement. So, again, back to the read of the statute, we would say we've achieved access for, according to Mississippi state law, we've achieved ballot access for a federal office, the Office of President of the United States.
So there's no other hurdles that you know of?
No.
Okay.
What has to happen is a convention or a gathering or some sort of convening of Mississippi representatives of the party has to select a candidate, and then they have to issue a formal letter to the state of Mississippi.
And as you said earlier, you could have done all of that tomorrow, but you decided to wait until you had an opportunity to, you know, discuss things and have more of a grassroots movement to give you time to prepare in advance of the convention. In other words, you could be on the ballot tomorrow if you held your convention tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a possible thing. Mississippi Justice Party State Committee could accelerate the timeline for the convention. But we're the intention, as I understand it, is to build the party and raise money, create, be part of the debate. We have a point of view that's different than the other parties that are out there. We're gaining a lot of political traction in the arena, at the grassroots level for sure, and some at the higher media level. And we're in a formation phase. So this this decision of yours is very critical for our ability to express our free speech rights and be able to be effective in this 2012 election cycle.
One of the things that I'm having a hard time sort of wrapping my arms around, and we did some quick legislative research this morning, is what's the policy reason behind requiring you to wait until you've had the convention? What's the distinction under our law between saying, okay, you have access to the ballot and the only thing you have left to do is submit a name, and saying, you know, we require you to wait until you actually have the name? And I can't think of any policy reason behind doing that, other than maybe you'll decide not to have the convention and you won't have a leader, and I don't know what the long-term ramifications of that are either. So I would, you know, I don't want to cut off any other conversation, but I personally would like to look into that aspect a little bit more and see if we are able to dig up any legislative history on that matter, and also just double check with what you said about the state of Mississippi, that there are in fact no other additional hurdles. I think that's what this letter says, but I think it might, at least from my perspective, make some sense to hold this over. But wanted to see if my colleagues had any other additional thoughts or questions. Commissioner Walther?
My current view is very similar to Commissioner Bowerly, and that is, I think we're just stuck with the language and the opinion that we've, got on file on the internet is one that I support. I don't think it's, unless we had a very strong historical precedent for it, I don't think I'm willing to move off the language that I think is pretty clear. It's, you don't have a candidate yet, you haven't done anything to elect it yet, other than get ready for a convention. Until you do, I think the technical aspects of the statute just aren't complied with. And so I think we're stuck with that. And I guess you've just got a balancing act to see, should we advance the convention for the reasons that you speak of, or hold them off for the other reasons that you speak of? And it's hard, I guess that's one you're just going to have to figure out, I guess.
Yeah.
Commissioner Bowerly?
Thank you. I wouldn't oppose holding it over if people want more time. I support the draft that we have, but I certainly wouldn't stand in the way of more time for people to consider this. I do just want to note, perhaps in defense of the guide, I agree with Commissioner McGann. I think that I think the guides are useful to people because they try to put into what statutory language, which is sometimes difficult to understand, and it is some plain language for people. And in your comment to us yesterday, you cited the part about how to qualify as a state party committee, and that includes the indicating that you have to achieve ballot access for one. And on the page ahead of that, it sort of gives the overview of what it means to qualify as a political party, and the benefits of political party status apply only to organizations that qualify as political parties. And there's two aspects to that, as noted in the guide versus federal law, and that cites back to the provision that we read, that the political party is a committee organization whose nominated or selected candidates for federal office appear on the ballot as state party's candidates. And then it breaks it down further if you want to be the national committee of a party or the state party of a committee, because obviously the structure works that way. And so as I read the guide, I don't think it's inconsistent, in my view, with the statute. It does break it down, and in that process, if you don't go through that whole section, you might be perhaps confused that it's achieving ballot access is the only thing that's required. But the statute, as noted on the page before, requires that candidates or federal office the nominated or selected candidates for federal office appear on the ballot. And you've obviously got on a glide path to this. As you mentioned, you're going to have a convention where you're going to nominate someone. I think we assume who it is, but that's your process. And then obviously the state has already indicated that you will have a spot for that person on the ballot once you've nominated that person. And I think certainly, I'm not interested in making things harder for new committees, because I think this kind of participation, new ways of organizing people around issues or concerns is really important to our system. So I certainly don't want my support for this draft to be read that way. I'm just bound by the statute, and the statute seems to me to indicate this is the answer. But I think that all of these efforts to increase participation in whatever form in our system are really important and should be supported. But my personal views on that can't overcome what I think is the reading of the statute that I think is required here. So.
Commissioner Ballard, if I could ask you, where were you I might have the different version of the guide, but which part were you referring to when you said the page before?
Page 121.
Okay. In the section about benefits of political party status?
Two, qualifying as a political party.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Walter.
I wonder if you want, when would we be coming back again? If you had an opinion on this draft today, at least you know what you've got, and you don't have to come back to us if you decide to have the convention in the next few weeks or something. I don't know what your thinking is on that, but if it's that important to you, we would be putting this off for a while, and you would still have some uncertainty until we actually decide something. So maybe something to consider. I don't know.
Commissioner McGann.
Thank you. I think taking a look at the legislative history would probably make some sense. So I think it holding it over makes some sense, and that's unfortunate for you because that's another period of time where you're not a state party. But at this point, reading, it's not hard to read the votes, even if this wing of the commission says yes, you're still not getting the full yes. So, you know, right now the draft that's public is the best we have without more effort to do some research. The statute, I haven't checked the legislative history, but the thing to keep in mind with the statute is it was passed at a time where really all that was contemplated was two major parties, and it was designed to capture what was already in existence. You had the Democratic Party, you had the Republican Party, they had national committees, they had state committees, and you had the DCCC and the DSCC and the two Republican committees, so you have six national committees. The statute sort of really captures the existing lay of the land as it was in the mid-70s, and really for the most part today. But what it doesn't really contemplate are third parties. It assumes, to me, you can read the statute as assuming you are a party, and it tells you who's a party and who's not for purposes of being subject to contribution limits and the like. As one who tends to read the statute narrowly, more with a scalpel, not a meat cleaver, I tend to want to not have the statute reach people. This is odd for me because now you're here saying, please make FECA reach me. That's just not in my wheelhouse. That's just not an argument I'm used to making. But what I do have sympathy for is what you're essentially saying is a barrier to entry. You are, because of the statute, being crippled to a certain extent from competing with the proverbial big boys who are the focus of this statute. So the question really that the legislative history may or may not answer is these definitions and the political parties defined in, you know, 431.16, but 14 and 15 defined national committee and state committee, are these merely codifying the existing structure, or are they really supposed to be barriers to entry? Because you could read 16 as defining, okay, political party means an association, committee, organization nominates a candidate for election, and we've already read it out loud. That's the third time we've read it out loud. Certainly all those folks are political parties. But for when a new party forms, is that the only way that they become a party? It seems odd that, well, the Democratic Party didn't have to ask an agency for permission to be a party when it started. I'm not sure when it started. Given that they called Jefferson Jackson Day dinners, I'm not sure the date is particularly crisp since they were not really contemporaries. The Republican Party, a little bit easier to pinpoint that. You know, Abe Lincoln didn't have to come and say, hey, there's these new guys. I need permission before I get to raise money subject to extra limits. Completely new system, not one that really was contemplated when the major parties were started. And one could imagine if they had to jump through the hoops you have to jump through, they probably wouldn't get too far through the first hoop. And I don't think maybe the statute was intended to be barrier to entry. I mean, maybe it is really incumbent protection. There certainly is a lot of that in the statute. And maybe it is a way to maintain the existing order. But maybe it's not. Maybe it was just designed to capture the existing structure and not be a barrier for other people being part of it. Because once you go through one election and you have a candidate, there's no question you're a party. But you're caught in this circular problem at the beginning where you don't really get to ramp up and compete with the established parties until you have a candidate, and you don't really get to have a candidate without the money to pay to get a candidate, and you're kind of stuck. And I can't really believe the statute was intended to do that. Maybe there is some legislative history that says something along the lines of this isn't intended to preclude third parties from forming or that kind of thing. But we are stuck with the statutory language, which, again, requires a reading that would say this is not a statute that defines who is or who is not a political party when the party begins. This is merely defining for purposes of campaign finance limits who certainly is subject to limits. Right, you may have a group that says we're not a party, we can raise unlimited money, and the FEC will say, no, you're a political party because you have a candidate on the ballot. Oh, so you are then limited because the limit has to be tied to a candidate. That's an elaborate way of saying, you know, you cite Citizens United in your comments, which really has absolutely nothing to do with party committees, but has everything to do with it because it talks about who's really independent of candidates and who isn't, for limits, and it is really kind of a limit question. So we're going to see if we can come up with something. I'm inclined to say yes to you. You can be a party now, but I'm not sure it's up to me as an unelected bureaucrat. I think it's a legislative. It could end up being a legislative issue. And if the statute means what it says, there's not much we can do other than say, definitely, when you get your convention done and the draft that's currently, you'll be a state party someday. But you're going to have to fight with one hand behind your back between now and then, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I'm inclined to say yes, but on the other hand, I can't just ignore the statute. So we have to find something somewhere that lets us read it. And you know, agencies do have discretion to read statutes. We get deference in court as long as they're not contrary to law, which in layman's terms means we're not just ignoring the statute. And we don't want to do that because, you know, we don't want to have an issue where it looks like we're just, you know, throwing the statute away. And that's why I asked the question about the case law. There's cases, you know, a lot of case law limits the reach of a lot of the statutory language. And if we have that situation, I'm always willing to read the statute narrowly because I think the courts have compelled us to do that. This is a little bit different because we're not being asked to read the statute narrowly. We're asking it to you want to be part of all this fun and all these contribution limits, which is not what most people other than those who actually want to elect candidates directly, want to do. They want to avoid all this as much as possible. So the case law tends to limit the reach of this, not expand it. So we'll, you know, with that, I guess hold it over and see if there's a way we can come up with a yes. But to get a yes, we'll take four commissioners, so it has to be not just me speculating out loud about what I would do. It has to be something that I think enough commissioners can be comfortable with. So with that, I'll yield back, and I think we do need to hold it over.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner McGinn. Any other comments or questions? Commissioner Walther?
I just want to leave the impression that the statute doesn't mean anything, because if we do what you ask, and that is basically eliminate that language from the statute as far as how we're going to enforce it, then that means anybody who doesn't even have a candidate can go out and get the limits. And the limits are there for various reasons, and those are ones that we have to respect, even though sometimes we might have views on what we'd do if we were passing the law ourselves. So I think there's a policy reason for looking at the actual language, and it's unless there's something out there that no one here has yet been able to find, I think it would be hard to ignore that language.
I think the language, in my view, is subject to different interpretations. Maybe it leans more toward the draft that's been made blue, but I think it is subject to interpretation. And I think it would mean if we, in your characterization, Commissioner Walther, ignored it, it would be true that parties could raise money without a candidate, but this party has access to the ballot. So I think that's a major distinction that we are considering. Any other comments? Thank you so much for your time. It was very helpful. And we will be in touch. The Office of General Counsel will be in touch with respect to whether we're going to consider this on a tally vote, and we could do that relatively quickly, or whether we'll consider it again at the next open meeting. Okay?
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Palmer, are there any management and administrative?
Sorry.
Steve, what do you got going on?
It's cool. Just walk, start walking. Like Justice, like Chief Justice Rehnquist used to do. Just get up and start walking around. He was the Chief Justice, though.
Yes, ma'am. Where are you going? Mr. Palmer, are there any management and administrative matters to discuss?
I had a lot to say, but no, there are none.
Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.